Well, next hour, Dr. Jillian Holloway joins us as we talk about after-death communications by dreaming. Should be a fascinating program. And when we come back, final phone calls for the hour with Major John Major Jenkins on Coast to Coast AM. John, let's talk about the Venus cycle once again and why this was important for the Mayans. Again, they were skilled astronomers. We know that.
Yeah.
And this calculating of the Venus cycle with extreme accuracy, what does that tell you?
Well, yeah, they definitely could do their calculations and their math. The Venus cycle has an interesting relationship with the sun. So there's a sun-Venus relationship. Every five Venus cycles, or morning star appearances of Venus, those occur in 8 years. So every 8 years, you have five Venus risings. So this 5-8 relationship is a mathematical ratio that's harmonious. It's sort of the basis of the musical octave. And the Mayas saw this in a very interesting way. This basically means that every 8 years, there's a five-pointed star that's traced in the sky with the Venus star risings. So they integrated this in their mythology of Quetzalcoatl. Quetzalcoatl was Venus, and Venus goes through other parts of the cycle. It's morning star for a while, but it's also evening star for a while. So it's got this dual nature, and the deity Quetzalcoatl is a deity that integrates the dual nature. And this is a really profound spiritual idea. It's when we can balance and integrate the two sides of our nature that we can achieve wholeness. And that's very much a part of the mythology of the rebirth of Quetzalcoatl and the spiritual teachings of the Maya.
Was Kukulkan also a god for them?
Yeah, actually, if we're speaking of the Maya, we should be speaking of Kukulkan. Kukulkan is the Maya deity name or word for Quetzalcoatl, which, technically speaking, comes to us from the Aztecs.
Okay,
but it's the same deity reference.
Very good. Any relationship to Christ in terms of stories?
Well, I do believe that there are archetypal parallels. There's like universal symbols that you find in many of the world's great traditions. And so it's not surprising, and it's something that we should take very seriously, that we find parallel stories in widely divergent traditions. So with the idea of Christ, I think the parallel to the Quetzalcoatl story is that there is a kind of this idea of a sacrifice and a death, and then a rebirth into a higher reality or a higher integration. That's central to the Quetzalcoatl story, and of course we have those themes going on in Christ's passion.
Do the Mayas talk about a great flood like Noah in the Bible?
Well, that is a concept and an idea in their world age doctrine, and here we can go back to what an earlier caller, Hugh, brought up about the YouTube movie that he saw, where in the world age doctrine, there are five ages, and it's quite likely that they are intended to relate to the five ages totaling the 26,000-year precession cycle. We're not exactly sure, but it seems to work. And there's a process where each age is transformed by an elemental force. One is fire, one is earth, one is water or floods, and the other is air, and then the highest is ether or space, which is the integrating world age. Now, the idea that the flood comes and, transforms the world and wipes clean the world, I always like to remind people that, you know, sometimes it's not always just about the literal thing that happens. You know, that's very dramatic, and our culture tends to fixate a bit on the literal interpretation. Of course, that's what drives a lot of the Hollywood doomsday movies and so on. It's such a fantastic spectacle to see a tidal wave washing over the Himalayas or something like that. If you've seen the trailer for the movie, that's kind of what's one of the trailers. So it's really dramatic and a spectacle, but there's also more importantly, there's like a spiritual teaching going on in this. And I think that the flood idea, which is universal, is representative of these deeper teachings.
All right, back to the calls. Cardiff by the Sea in California, it's George. Hey, George, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Sure. Thanks for taking the call. I've always wanted to ask this, and I was happy to hear that you were on tonight. Maybe you addressed this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. With the Mayan calendar, and I'm not sure exactly what's on there, what it says, but there's a whole hullabaloo about it ending. Does it say something bad's really going to happen, or is it just it has to do with this galactic lineup? That has anyone just thought of that it's just the end of the calendar, like our calendar, and that bad's going to happen. You're just going to flip the page and it starts all over again.
Absolutely, yeah. That's actually what I've been saying for about 20 years in the Maya tradition. It's all about a renewal, and in fact, I'm glad you brought this point up because it's one of those misnomers in the marketplace that the calendar ends in 2012. I don't know where that began. It sounds kind of compelling and cool or something like that, but no, the Maya time philosophy is cyclic. So when one cycle ends, a new cycle begins. Like, we use this kind of language in our common terminology, like we might say, at the end of the day, I put down my tools and I have dinner. Okay, the end of the day. Oh, does that mean the day ends, the world ends, time ends? No, we just have these linguistic conventions. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, the galactic alignment, per se, people have been picking up on this idea. It's actually a fact of astronomy, and my work shows the evidence for how this alignment astronomy is integrated into, like, the ball game and the creation myth and so on. But all the evidence points to the alignment being conceived of by the Maya as a kind of a world renewal event in a positive way, you know, like opening up to a greater consciousness, a greater picture, the unity picture. The creation mythology is very revealing around this. But some people in the marketplace are, you know, using the galactic alignment to connect it up with pole flips and stuff like that, and I don't see any evidence for that. One of the big questions with this is that, you know, the galactic alignment doesn't happen specifically only on one day, you know, December 21st of 2012. It's a slow process, so we have to think in terms of like a range or a zone, and the Maya in their calculations seem to have got it pretty much on target.
All right. Thanks.
There you go. Thanks,
thank you,
George. Next up, we go to Grand Junction, Colorado. Shauna is on hold, but not anymore. Hi, Shauna.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Okay, I just have one. It's a pretty simple question. You kind of touched base on it earlier about how the Christians went through and burned a lot of the ancient documents that they had written up and everything. And there was something I was reading a while ago. It was just on the internet, so I don't know if it's true, and that's why I thought I would ask, is that there was one guy, I don't remember his name, but they knew him as like a serious guy who went through, and he kind of led them in burning all the stuff. And he actually came forward later and felt bad about it and talked some of the other people, the other Christians, I guess priests, into trying to recover some of these things because what they were doing, I guess they thought were wrong after a while, and that they started trying to rewrite it almost, and
right,
that the calendar was one of the things that got tampered with. Is that true?
Yeah, Shauna, that's absolutely true. What you're referring to there is Bishop Diego de Landa.
Yes,
he was one of the Franciscan friars, and he had a zealotry for the book burning, but then years later, he was actually becoming more interested in what this tradition was about, and he encouraged some of the Maya people to write down their signs and their hieroglyphs, and he ended up writing a manuscript based on that, which has become famous, The History of All the Things of Yucatan. And, you know, he was working in the 1500s, so this manuscript languished for 250 years until it was rediscovered by a French cleric named Brasseur de Bourbourg in 1860, and he published it. And this became the key reference for early scholars to at the very beginning point of deciphering the Maya hieroglyphic script, it was pretty botched in many ways. It was pretty flawed in many ways, but it, Delanda thought that these glyphs represented like letters and could be interpreted like that, but they're not really like that. But nevertheless, he was really responsible for preserving some of the core ideas in the Maya hieroglyphic writing, but it had to be deciphered very carefully by scholars in the 1800s.
Was it true, though, that he had tampered with the calendar, that he tried to rewrite some of what got erased?
No, I don't think he did. I think he just had mistaken interpretations of it, and that led to a lot of sort of false ideas about it for a while until scholars got on to what his misinterpretations were. I don't think he had like a malicious sort of idea to tamper with the calendar in any kind of way. He just didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that was just my only question. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Shauna.
So what about the who cares concept, John? People who don't even know about the calendar, is this event going to affect them at all?
Oh, probably not. Of course, the whole 2012 phenomenon, I write about this quite a bit in my book, The 2012 Story, the larger phenomenon, I don't know. I think that in some indirect way, it can affect people who don't really know or care about the calendar. I think that certainly in the Maya world today, there's a renaissance going on of Maya culture. A lot of my work has been driven by my passion for the Maya culture and my trips to Maya land and so on. And so there's this process by which the modern contemporary Maya leadership is encountering their ancient ideas in this long count calendar. Remember, this is a part of the tradition that was forgotten, and it had to be reconstructed. There's many other aspects of the tradition that have survived, and we have to honor that and respect that. But I think there can be a beautiful kind of integration of people coming together around this 2012 idea that can stimulate not only a renaissance among the Maya people, but perhaps something that will really signal a turning point or a tipping point in Western culture and how we, deal with each other and how we run the planet.
In the 2012 story, what do you see as one of the, I think, biggest fallacies of the Mayan calendar story?
Well, obviously the biggest fallacy is that the Maya predicted the end of the world in 2012.
Yeah.
But more to the point is that when you say that, then when you say that, no, the Maya didn't predict the end of the world in 2012, that's not the end of the story. A lot of times you can go to a handy scholar with a PhD and they'll tell you the same thing, but then they let the conversation drop. What's really going on, and this is something that's vastly ignored, is the reconstruction of this amazing paradigm, this spiritual teachings and the astronomical science that goes along with it. There, it is, 2012 is a true artifact of the tradition, and there's real information that we can be exploring. And there's a tendency to maybe just sort of not even reference the Maya when we talk about 2012, to just sort of use 2012 on the banner of whatever people are doing or something. But I think that there's a real possibility and there's a real potential for indigenous people to rise up and to reclaim their self-determination and have a more powerful place on the world stage, and for the rest of the world to open the doors to let that happen, because I think there's something in the indigenous consciousness that we in the Western world have lost. You know, it's like that foreground-background thing. You know, we need to have an integration of these two things.
Let's go to Carthage, Missouri. Hello, Brett. You're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Good morning.
Morning, Brett.
I would like to first say hello to some Coast family, Jim and David in Kansas City. My first question, Major Jenkins, is if the Maya still exist, why did they desert their temples? And number two, if I received in a vision that in 2012 in the galactic alignment, they would be reborn and re-inhabit their temples and start pick up where they left off. Could this be true?
Well, that's a beautiful vision. The idea of temples being abandoned is really endemic and indicative of our own culture, I think, to a large extent as well. And I think it happened to the Maya. This is why they abandoned the temples, because the sacred spark got lost. The sacred spark went out. They lost connection to that sacred dimension. So the temples no longer could be operated. They sort of, you know, the Maya rulership got corrupt is what happened. The Maya king no longer could perform the shamanic rituals that kept him and the kingdom in touch with the supernatural spiritual domain. And so they just walked away. Now, everything in the cycles of time goes through periods of increase and periods of decrease. You know, the spiritual light fades, and then at times the spiritual light returns and increases. And your vision, I think, is probably an intuitive sort based on an intuition as to what needs to happen in our world. We live in the Western culture is very materialistic, and we live in basically a desacralized world. You know, the sacred dimension has been expunged. It's been, you know, we live in exile. So I think that, you know, what really needs to happen is a reconnection with that spiritual domain and lighting the fires in the temples once again and returning to the temples and returning to, you know, a spiritual connection with that higher guiding insight.
I'm sure you've talked to modern Mayans. Do they understand this calendar story?
Yeah, they do. You know, for them, you know, the specifics of the mechanics of the long count did get forgotten. And of course, there are Maya leaders that are returning to studying the nuts and bolts of the calendar. So it's being reintegrated. But they never lost the core idea of the long count 2012 teaching, which is that at the end of the cycle, there's a great opportunity for transformation and renewal, but a sacrifice is necessary. And this is kind of the deeper thing that, you know, people shy away from, but it, you kind of have to get into it. That word, sacrifice, has a lot of bad connotations, but the concept of sacrifice is actually key and central to all of the world's great religious traditions. And so the modern Maya do understand the importance of sacrifice and ceremony for facilitating a successful transformation and renewal. And so it's not something 2012 and cycle endings, it's not something that's predetermined or fated to happen to us, somehow built into the architecture of time. It's actually an opportunity for us to do the thing that's necessary in order to transform and renew the world.
We will come back with final phone calls with John Major Jenkins on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Dr. Jillian Holloway joins us as we talk about after-death communications via dreaming. When we come back, we're taking final phone calls with John Major Jenkins on Coast to Coast AM. John, what kind of supernatural events surrounded the Mayas? Anything?
Let's see. I'm not sure how to respond to that. There's a kind of a consciousness that I think is conducive to these kinds of events. I think that it's a kind of consciousness that sees connections between things that don't really seem there to normal consciousness. So perhaps in some way they were tuned into a supernatural dimension, or what we would call a supernatural dimension.
Next up, we go to Atlanta, Georgia. Jonathan, you're up with us. Hi, John.
Hey, George. John, are you familiar with the term Zavuya, the Mayan term?
Yes.
I was wondering what you can say about that. Do you think that that term could be similar, their definition is similar to the Indians' Akashic Records or Carl Jung's Collective Unconscious, or what the remote viewers call the Matrix?
I think that's very possible. Let me sketch real quick. Zavoya is a mystical location that Maya shamans would access or know about. They believe that there was a kind of a secret language that they could speak that was representative of this other dimension. So it does sort of have the connotation of being this otherworldly place where mystical wisdom is present.
Have you encountered any shamans, modern-day shamans, that speak of this or have regular access to it? And
well, it's a term that it's a term that specifically comes from the Yucatec Maya tradition, and I don't know of any Yucatec Maya shaman there that I suppose probably the Yucatec Maya shaman Hunbat Men has spoken about this. I do believe that's true, but I would imagine that a similar concept can be found among other Maya groups. I imagine it would probably be a fairly esoteric or secret part of their tradition.
Well, you spoke of a reconstruction of a new spiritual paradigm. Do you think that that involves basically awakening to our interdimensional nature and kind of dying to our old selves and our materialistic mindsets that keep us trapped in a limited perception of reality? And, you know, that's accessing this collective unconscious or this Zavuya is something that we will begin to see and awaken to here pretty soon.
Very well said. And actually, when I speak of reconstructing the ancient paradigm of the long count, on one level, I'm really sort of just talking about the nuts and bolts of the astronomy and so on. But the second part of my book, the 2012 story, actually goes into this more esoteric or philosophical side of it. And I talk about the Maya creation mythology as a repository of these deep spiritual archetypal dynamics. And it does basically involve the dynamic between limited ego consciousness versus a higher consciousness or this unitary consciousness that's represented in the myth by the father of the hero twins. So in the same way that, like, Joseph Campbell, the great mythologist, would talk about archetypes and the collective unconscious and the similarities between mythological stories around the world, and also the universal spiritual wisdom inside of these mythological stories. You know, our culture tends to dismiss myth as being sort of unreal or fantasy or something like that, but myth is the repository of these deep archetypal principles, and as you said so well, I think we are approaching a time that we will transcend the limits of ego consciousness and get back into this more selfless approach to relationship and to also doing business in the world so that we can create a sustainable world.
Did the Mayans fear anything, John? Were they afraid of anything?
Well, I guess I don't know for sure. Sure, they had all the range of human emotions. In fact, this dark rift feature, which is the centerpiece and sort of the key to my reconstruction of the galactic alignment astronomy, the dark rift was known to be the Shebalba Bay or the Shebal Bay, which is translated variously as the road to the underworld or the road to awe or the road to fear. Now, that's probably a too literal interpretation. What I think that means is that our own fears is the thing that keeps the door closed. When we can embrace and transcend our fears, then the door, which is represented by the dark rift, it's kind of like a portal, you know, it's like the door to the other world. Then we can open that door to the other world and walk through and embrace, you know, the hidden teachings and the secret wisdom and so on. But we have to get past the fear first.
Let's go to first-time caller in Baltimore, Maryland. Good morning, Charles.
Hi. Good morning. Great show. Look, I would like to ask the question. You had asked the question, did the Egyptians have of relationships with the Mayas. And I think your guest said that he hadn't did any study on that, right?
Right. Yeah. I don't think they had any direct relations, although they did share in the same sort of perspectives and wisdom about the universe.
No. Well, I have evidence that the ancient Egyptians and the Maya civilizations had a lot in common. If you look at the building of the pyramids in South America, it's on the same structure as your Egyptian pyramids.
Right, and there was pyramids in China as well, and many other parts of the world.
Yeah, but based on the same mathematical structure.
Well, that's because the mathematical principles are universal in nature, so they can be accessed basically by anybody anywhere, but it doesn't mean that they were going around the world in boats or something like that.
Well, they were going around the world in boats, because if you read history closely, you'll find that your Africans were in Europe, all right?
Yeah.
Long before that modern history recorded it.
Well, and there's talk that the Egyptians came to North America.
Well, there's no doubt about it. They have artifacts down in South America right today of your ancient Egyptians. And also, if you go back to the Columbus area, before he discovered America, he had a discussion with the king of Portugal, right, and was told about the secret route to America that the Africans had given him.
Yeah, I'm not denying that. You're absolutely right. There were boats found off the mouth of the Amazon in South America from the Phoenicians and so on. That's fascinating how people really were getting around the world. I just don't think that the Egyptians taught the Maya their wisdom, which is often sort of what people think.
I'll tell you one thing, John. It's the only calendar I've ever heard about that people are talking about so much these days.
And it's a unique calendar. There's nothing else like the long count in other parts of the world.
What kind of technology did they possess at its highest peak?
Well, let's see. They didn't have a lot of, you know, high technologies that we think of. I think they were more oriented towards an inner realm technology, like the shamanistic technology. And obviously, there's mushroom stones in many parts of Mesoamerica. These were symbolic of the rituals that they would do with shamanic plants and so on.
They were way advanced that way.
Absolutely, but, you know, they didn't have the wheel. They didn't use the wheel. You know, obviously, they were capable of doing architecture and stone work and those kinds of things.
Go to Cleveland, Ohio. Brian, east of the Rockies. Hey, Brian, you're up.
Hi. I'm going back to the Egyptians, I guess. I was wondering if the Mayan pyramids are laid out like a constellation, like the ones in Egypt or even in Cambodia.
There has been research done into the great pyramids, the Street of the Dead, and the Pyramid of the Sun and the Moon at the great site of Teotihuacan, which is north of modern-day Mexico City. And I think it was Hugh Harleston who did work on this, and it was talked about by Peter Tompkins in his books, that there does seem to be parallels in the same way that the Egyptian pyramids are laid out to the three stars in Orion. It seems like Teotihuacan was done in a similar way. My own research on the great site of Chichen Itza shows that there was a sensitivity to the Pleiades and the sun's position, and almost every single Maya site has some kind of archaeology that's oriented to astronomy.
Let's review. What do we know for sure about the Mayas?
We know that 2012 is a true artifact of their tradition. We know that they didn't predict doomsday in 2012, and we know that there's a very, very profound cosmology and spiritual teaching inside of the 2012 tradition.
Thomas in Santa Barbara, California. Hi, Thomas.
Hello, George. Hello, John. Great
show.
Yes, hello. John, I always enjoy hearing your interviews. Your work is fantastic. And by the way, we've shared a few emails. My comment is about the precision required for the Maya to intentionally hit the winter solstice from over 2,000 years away. To do this, they would need to know the length of the year to within about 40 seconds. To quickly understand this, let's imagine that the Maya knew the length of the year with an error of only 1 minute. Projecting out 10 years, for example, the total air would accumulate to 10 minutes. And since the long count calendar was put in use at least 2,100 years ago, the air would be 2,100 minutes or more, which is longer than the length of the day. And the precision is just amazing. It's like measuring the width of the United States to within 20 feet, or the distance from Los Angeles to Tokyo to within 40 feet. And percentage-wise, this is 99.9999% correct. And in my opinion, this is not merely remarkable. This is absolutely stunning.
It is, yeah.
Any comments? And I'll hang on for clarification if you want.
Absolutely, Thomas. Thank you so much. Yeah, we've engaged in some really great email exchanges.
You've done some really brilliant work
on the galactic alignment. And well said. I love those analogies. I couldn't said it better myself. It definitely means that the Maya were doing some incredibly impressive astronomy. And we have, new investigations of the various long count dates and the Dresden Codex that shows a similar kind of fascination and work with the precession of the equinoxes that the Maya were doing, which, of course, feeds totally into the galactic alignment work. So thank you for all the work you're doing in bringing such incisive clarity to the details of Maya mathematics.
Off we go now to Palm Springs, California, and it's Wilson. Coast to coast.
I had a question. I was wondering if they've modern Mayans have talked about a mass reunion. My family's from Chicamula, Guatemala, and my grandmother, who lives here with us in the United States, is always saying that she needs to go home before 2012 back to her homeland. I was just wondering if they have mentioned anything about mass reunions or calling of their people back to their homelands or any type of thing for maybe like a mass conscious type of reason or anything like that.
Oh, thank you so much for bringing it back to the modern Maya. I'm really fascinated with what's going on. I haven't heard anything specifically about a calling home. Of course, obviously, a lot of Maya people were dispersed in the 1980s when the genocidal death squads were happening, and a lot went to Mexico and other parts of Central America. A lot came to the L.A. area and other parts of the United States. But what I do see going on is kind of a Maya renaissance. There are Maya leaders that are now coming and out and speaking about the traditions. There's incredible work. There was an Associated Press article just recently in which a Quiche Maya leader named Apolinario Chile Pichtun talked about 2012 and how he was so upset that he was getting tired of answering all the questions about doomsday and just reinforcing the fact that the Maya didn't predict doomsday in 2012. I think it would be a good thing. There's an ethnic Maya scholar named Victor Montejo who came out of the death squads, and he ended up getting his PhD in California. And he's been returning to Guatemala, and at one point he had a high position in the government. So there's a lot of good things going on with this Maya renaissance and the reunion of people that have been dispersed. I haven't heard a lot about that, but it sounds like a really compelling thing to take place.
Okay, next up we go to Los Angeles. Hello, Frank, first-time caller. Go ahead, Frank.
Hi, John, this is your Uncle Frank.
Oh, hello, Frank.
Yeah, your entire family is proud of you. I've always been fascinated with the Mayan numeral system, especially their possession of a zero, which always signifies a very advanced culture. But I'm asking, is there any more knowledge, any new knowledge about the culture that predated the Mayans, the Olmec culture?
Yeah, I'm so excited you're calling in. This is a calculus professor here, and he's got the goods on the info. The culture that predated the Maya, the first one would have been the Azapan culture, and they seem to be the ones who invented this 2012 calendar. Before that, you had the Olmec people. And, we have a lot of good research into the Olmec at the sites of, say, for example, La Venta. We actually know that they were doing some pretty profound astronomy. They oriented their main axis of the temple buildings to a certain star in the north, and then when that star shifted with precession, they basically tore down their buildings and reoriented the axis a few degrees to account for precession. So even around 1200 BC, we know that they were aware of things like precession.
There you go. Thanks, Uncle Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Let's go to Fullerton. Naomi, you're up with us, west of the Rockies. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, George.
Hi,
I'm
Naomi.
Surprised I got in.
Yeah, well, I got a few minutes, but I got you.
Okay. I wanted to ask your guest if the Mayans believe like the Hopi Indians, and also in Plato's Republic, Plato, his theory also was like the Hopis, that the humans came from Mother Earth, came from underground originally.
Mm-hmm. The ant people.
The ant people, yes. And also, if the Mayans had a woman called, like, She Who Remembers, a special woman that with knowledge to teach other, to go around and teach young women in their tribe about womanhood.
All right, a minute to go, John. Anything strange like that in the Mayan culture?
Well, they have mythology around that, too. You know, there's a lot of ideas of the return of the wisdom teachers and how, you know, it's not something, wisdom is not something that can be destroyed. It's something that can go into hiding during certain epochs of darkness, but it always comes back around in the cycles of time.
All right, let's talk about the book, 2012, The Story. Where do we get it?
Well, I have a new webpage set up for it, so the2012story.com. And I have a special offer there, actually, for the book and my 3CD audio program. And, of course, my old standby website, alignment2012.com, is where people can find my other books and CDs. And also, I've got all my events on the2012story.com website, and both websites, actually, for my West Coast tour that's coming up. It's going to be going from L.A. to Seattle all through November, so I'm really hoping that people can drop by to one of the bookstore events that I'm doing and say hi.
Great. Thank you, John. John Major Jenkins. He knows his stuff. Up next, we talk about after-death communications in the dream world.